that was the joke. Thank you.
Actually, so it's funny you say that because I started reading a book, actually two books on like Puerto Rican food, so I can learn more about my people and my culture through the food. And it's not common for American Puerto Ricans to eat this way, but in Puerto Rico, it's actually a more fish-based diet than a pork-based diet. It's very like cod heavy.
Interesting.
I learned that.
That makes a lot of sense.
That stuff fascinates me. But yeah, the joke I was going for was just that like all brown people just eat tacos. Like that's just the assumption that you make.
I mean, look, tacos are very good. I had a burrito today for lunch. The place that's right here in the corner from my house, it's like, it looks like, it's the perfect place. It looks like trash. There's always at least one child running around and everything tastes amazing. There's a giant mural of like a snake and an eagle high-fiving or fighting. I'm not 100% sure. While a bunch of like ladies work in a field and then some guys are working with some horses. And then, you know, that's, it's just like you walk in and you're like, yeah, this is going to be some good food. And it is every time.
The best places to get food from, like places like that, are places that like barely pass the health inspector test or like inspection, but that they do pass it. Like,
yeah, if they got a C or a B, you're good. If they got a D, there's a chance it might not be the best, but like it'll taste very good. And it's just like, you're like, ooh, I don't know if I should be in here. If that's it, get it to go. That's all I was going to say. Get it to go.
I always think like if you walk in and they've got those ceilings that are the kind that like are just like panels and you can like you push up the panel, you know you're going to eat good. Like you know, yeah, and like and like your burrito is going to be like $6.50 and it's going to be a fire burrito.
Yeah. Or my favorite thing is like if you show up and like every third table is wobbly, you're like, oh yeah,
also,
it's about to be some.
Basically, if IRS the place food. Looks like it's falling apart, that like at any point the infrastructure of the building might collapse on you, you're going to eat good.
Yeah,
that's something I've learned over 30 years on this planet, and I maintain it.
I've learned that for Latin restaurants and for a couple of Asian restaurants too. Just like, does it look like shit? Yeah, fuck it, walk in. I bet you that food is amazing. I have gone to some like Chinese restaurants and Thai restaurants and Vietnamese restaurants where I'm like, ooh, should I be in here? And then you get that food and I'm like, holy fuck, is this amazing.
There's a Thai place on Lincoln. It's like Lincoln and like school in Chicago, which like if you're not from here that means nothing to you, but
such a
the
Chicago
sign is like
fried things
falling off the building. And like the paint and outside, it's like alongside, it's like next to like a really nice Starbucks and like these nice apartments and like all these nice buildings. And it's like in the middle, like just wedged in there. The paint on the front is like all peeling off and they do like these like noodle dishes. And they have like one of those, like you choose your spice level. And one of the spice levels is like has a, it's literally just says Thai spicy. And it has like a warning next to it, like do not order this unless. So like I usually get like a step down from that because like I love spicy food, but like even I know, like I know my limit. You got to know your limitations when it comes to spicy food.
Oh, yeah.
But just some of the best like Thai like noodle stir fry that I've ever had in my entire life, like just unbelievable. Like I'm like salivating thinking about it.
That reminds me of, I was listening to David Chang's podcast the other day, and he was talking about how like there's this Mexican joint in LA, I think it's called Guisados, and he was saying how like it's like widely known that there's one taco specifically, it's like the chili pepper taco. Everybody knows, like there's just like a certain type of person that can handle this, and the lay person cannot handle this taco.
Most people are not that person.
Right. I mean, you're like the superior race of Mexican where you can handle this. Like, it's just not, it's not for the faint of heart. And he was like, I'm a chef. I've been like, Koreans eat really like spicy food. Like, shouldn't be that hard. And he said he went in there and had like a bite and literally like his mouth was on fire, but he was like, they were all staring at me, so I had to finish it. he just like scarfed it down. He's like, it ruined my week. Like it literally ruined my entire week. It was so fucking hot.
That's hilarious.
I like my food. Like I honestly, like give me something that makes me feel like my mouth is bleeding and we're in good shape. Like I
never
love
understood that.
I've never been
I don't know what
that.
It is, man. I love it. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it. Like I like, it's not like I'm like, ooh, I'm eating this spicy food because it's spicy. Like there's, so, I don't know because you know, like cilantro, like people like that are genetically like anti-cilantro. It tastes like yeah. Like, I don't know if it's like a genetics thing, because like my mother like is like a spicy food like addict, and like that's, I think like I'm that way. My dad, on the other hand, is as about Midwestern white guy as they come, and he's a meat and potatoes, not potatoes, meat and potatoes kind of guy. Like every dinner I had growing up, we had a vegetable, a meat, generally red meat, and a potato. Every dinner I had with and we would literally set a gallon of milk on the table because so much milk would be consumed at dinner time.
That equally grosses me out.
Ooh, like, gross.
We had a fridge in our basement that like was filled with like beer and soda and stuff, but there would always be like 6 to 7 gallons of milk in there. And it would literally like my parents would open the fridge in the kitchen for like dinner time, and like the milk jug would be like a quarter full. And my dad would be like, tell me, or one of my brothers would be like, oh, run downstairs and grab a gallon of milk. Dan Landerman, Jay, who we work with, him and I bonded over that because he's from Wisconsin, which is obviously like the land of dairy. So, yeah. And then
your
whole
family has to have like bones of steel.
I've only ever broken one bone, and it's this pinky that you can see is all.
Oh, I broke my right pinky. Look at that. Janky. We're broken pinky brothers. That's fun.
That's nice.
Yeah. That's well, with the realization that Ted has had a fuck ton of milk in his lifetime, like, I love milk, but god damn. Welcome to NBA, the podcast that tries to talk about NBA shit, but mostly we just talk shit like milk. I'm your host, Nikki Quiles, aka Salt Frazier, my brother from the same mother.
Hi, I'm Jay, aka Booby Poor Tits.
Oh, wow. I didn't see the booby one. I just thought it said Bobby. That's great. And our brethren with less melanin, our other co-host.
Hey, what's up? It's Tad, aka Mike Booten. Hold my dick.
Oh, yeah. About, we're ready. Man, we're good to go. Arkansas's on the map with Booby Poor Tits. And I think now Mike Budenholzer my dick's got to keep a job.
That's sick.
Keeping his job, dude.
First coach in NBA history to be fired after winning the NBA Finals.
That was like my first question yesterday. Was like, so they have to keep him now, I think? Is that what we're saying?
You literally texted us. You literally said, so they have to keep Mike Budenholzer?
Yeah. That's
it's happening, man.
Look, man, he did it. He did
it. Technically his fourth, right? Three under Pop as an assistant coach, and then one now as a head coach.
Yeah, definitely one. Sure. I don't know about three. I don't know how many he got with the Spurs, but yeah, he's definitely got two.
He's had a couple when he was with.
Yeah, you're probably right.
If he's got four, he's got to get one more for the thumb or the pinky, depending on. Yeah, Mike Budenholzer strikes me as a pinky ring guy, though, so I think the next one's for the thumb.
It's got to be the thumb, yeah. But Popovich, on the other hand, he feels like a guy who first ring right to the thumb. He's like, I want a thumb ring, first ring. I know I'm going to get them all, so I'm going to be fine. guys, let's talk about some important shit. Space Jam 2. No, I'm kidding. First things first. The most important thing. It's time for Nikki Quiles' random stat quiz.
Oh, we got one. Look at that. Sure. I didn't think we were going to get one. I'm excited about this.
Last week, we talked about points per game. Which, fun fact, Giannis, because of the series, he is now tied for 10th all time with Kevin Durant for points per game in a final series, 35.2. That's a fun little fact. Here's a fun little fact that I'm hoping one of you two can answer. What NBA player has the most assists per game in a final series?
Okay.
It is a lot of assists.
Assists per game. Don't say that. Don't tell me it's Jrue Holiday.
No, Jrue Holiday is now, with this series, he's 20th.
Okay, good. Wow, assists per game.
I mean, Magic Johnson?
19th. Jrue Holiday is 19th. And you are correct, Magic Johnson.
Damn it.
Magic Johnson averaged 14 assists per game in the 1984-85 NBA Finals. Here's some fun fact. Wow. Second place is Magic Johnson with 13.6 assists. Third place is Magic Johnson with 13. Tied for third place is Magic Johnson with 13. Fifth place is Magic Johnson with 12.5. Sixth place is Magic Johnson with 12.4. And ninth place, or no, what was that?
Seventh
place is Michael Jordan with 11.4.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. The 90-91 NBA Finals, in five games, he averaged 11.4 assists per game, 44 minutes per game, 31.2 points, 6.6 rebounds, 2.8 steals, 1.4 blocks.
That makes sense. That's when Phil Jackson talked him to trust his teammates. That's why they won that year.
Because that was the series. Yeah, he said pass the ball. Yeah,
the extreme version.
I know we're going to get into the finals talk, and we'll obviously talk about Giannis's historic performance here. But one thing I noted during the broadcast last night is that Giannis is the most he's the only player since to score 50 points in a finals game since Michael Jordan did it in 1993 against who? The Phoenix Suns. Brutal. Brutal. Yikes.
We can talk more things like that. Giannis also is now the second power forward all time to have more than one MVP as well as a finals MVP. It's him and Tim Duncan. He's also the second player ever to have a multiple MVPs, a defensive player of the year, and a finals MVP. With who? Michael Jordan.
Of course.
He is the first player to have...
Isn't Hakeem on that list too?
Hakeem...
defensive player of the year.
He doesn't have multiple MVPs.
Oh,
gotcha. Giannis and Jordan have multiple MVPs, a defensive player of the year, and a finals MVP. Yeah, if you only consider one MVP, then yes, you can add Hakeem to that list.
Yeah. Those are Giannis,
only three. Yeah, only three.
Only three in that fucking good company to be in.
Giannis is the first player in NBA history ever to win a most improved player, MVP, defensive player, and finals MVP.
Wow.
I mean, we can just go ahead and say it. This is the Giannis episode because, like, it's just going to be how amazing he is at 26.
I mean, I texted you guys this, and I know he hasn't been in the league that long, but at this point, like, if he retired tomorrow, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't care what anybody says.
No question about it. Yeah. I mean, his resume is – people play 20 years to get to half of this resume.
You got two MVPs, champion, finals MVP, defensive player of the year, most improved player, five-time All-Star, All-Star MVP, five-time All-NBA, four-time All-Defensive player. All-Defensive team.
Insane.
That's just outrageous. It really is. I mean, like, and it's funny to me, and it's probably because he plays in Milwaukee, but the guy just frankly doesn't get the respect and the credit that he deserves. And I know the three of us are a very pro Giannis podcast. We are. Nikki especially. Nikki's baby boy Giannis just out there doing work. But good God, man. It's one of those things that like last night, like after the game ended, I was like, yeah, I'm just like kind of, I went to his Wikipedia page and was just kind of like going through it. And I was like, God, holy fuck. Like, why don't we talk about this more? Like, why? Like, not us specifically, but like just the people. Like, it is out. Like, his resume and accolades and career are fucking outrageous. Like, give my man his due.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that people don't give him his due, but this was the same thing. Like, and we'll talk about this more, but like, this was the type of series that was like a career defining series for Chris Paul and Giannis. Like this could have swayed either one of them in either direction. You know, unfortunately Chris Paul, it's swaying in a bit of a different direction, not as extremely as we thought maybe a couple games ago, but we could be having a very different conversation about Giannis. I think oftentimes we get caught up in the moment of like greatest player in the league. There's no way. How could you argue it? And it's just like, all right, let's just take a step back. Like, yes, they won the championship. Like, his resume is impeccable. And, like, no question, with just the one championship, he could retire today and first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, you couldn't argue it. But at the same time, like, I don't know that anybody was saying, like, he wasn't probably going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer already.
No. What I'm saying is that, like people, I feel like people want to, like, not give, like, they try to discredit him. Well, oh, yeah, but like this. Oh, well, you know, there's that. And it's like, shut the fuck up, man. Like, he is outrageously good. And
yeah,
it's honestly a product of where he plays. I mean, that's what it is. Like, nobody wants to talk about Milwaukee. Nobody wants to talk about the Bucks. And, like, I mean, even, like, we kind of talked about it. We're like, oh, is this, like, the last year of their championship window? And the answer is fuck no, because they have Giannis.
Yeah. I mean, he's playing amazing this year. And I think for years, everybody has said, oh, if Giannis can just get a three-pointer, if he could just shoot some threes, if he could just hit a three, if Giannis could hit that three, and that's why everyone's always been like, oh, Giannis isn't that good. He can't hit threes. He can do literally everything. There is not a single fucking thing on the court that Giannis can't do outside of shoot threes. And I would say free throws, but he went 17-19 in that last game. He said, fuck you, I can hit free throws. He saw that a bar in Milwaukee was giving out free shots every time he hits a free throw, and he took that personally.
I was talking about this last night with some people. I actually think the 10, not like the 1 through 10 countdown, I think it actually started helping him towards the end. Like, it ended up becoming like a metronome. Like, it was like his pacing. It helped him set a tempo for his fucking free throws. And like, he was 17 for 19 from the line yesterday.
Yep.
17 for 19.
By the time the finals came through, like, I bet if you looked at it, he probably was taking 13 seconds in the first round to shoot the first two rounds to shoot free throws. By the finals, he was every shot was up in 10. He was in rhythm at all times. Like, truly, I think you're right with like all those people trying to joke with him. He was like, "Nah, I got it now."
It was like legitimately like it became like his tempo setter. It's like 5, 6, 7, 8 and shoot, boom. And just like every single time.
And 5, 6, 7, 8.
I love it.
Hit that free throw. Yay. Yeah, I mean, he's played out of his mind. And we can go ahead and say it's not out of their minds, but Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton stepped up when needed.
Drew Holiday did what they need. Like, he played superb defense on Devin Booker and Chris Paul last night. I mean, was all up in them, was terrible offensively, like absolutely dreadful offensively. But like, he was able to make an impact, and like, great players make an impact however they can make an impact. Like, the reality is when you look at the box score, this is a bad offensive game across the board. Like, if Giannis doesn't have that 50 point game, they lose this game. Like, I mean, they only won by 7. So when you really break it down, like, If Giannis scores 10 less points or misses a couple free throws, they lose this game.
Or doesn't get those 5 blocks. That's 10 points.
I mean, I think to some extent, you got to give Mike Budenholzer some credit here, because the 4 games that they won, like obviously 4 in a row, games 3 through 6, they forced the Suns into like just a bunch of ISO heavy basketball. Like, there were so many times where I was like, what the fuck are the Suns doing? Like, it's literally Chris Paul dribbling around, handing it out to Devin Booker dribbling around, trying to run like a pick and roll with DeAndre Ayton. And like, at no point did it look like recently that they had gotten into any sort of offensive flow. Like, the Bucks made like other guys like kind of non-factors, and they're like, cool, you want to go ISO with Chris Paul and Devin Booker all night long? Like, that's fine. And if that's how you beat us, that is what it is. But like, we're done giving up the easy screen and rolls. We're done giving up like the easy kick out buckets. And I mean, frankly, like, they dared Devin Booker and Chris Paul to beat him, and they didn't.
And, well, like, and I think the other thing too is like, similar to what they did in the Atlanta series, like at one point, Bud, to his credit, was like, we're bigger than them. Like, they did like the Monstars thing where they just realized that fucking Danny DeVito was smaller.
He's bigger than we used to be.
That's what happened.
Guys, no Space Jam talk for later.
You're right. Sorry. But no, like, that's what they did, right? Like, he basically was like, hey, they don't have anybody beyond DeAndre Ayton. Like, they finally put Kaminsky in yesterday because DeAndre Ayton was just like not getting it done. And like, granted, he did the best he could on Giannis. Like, Giannis is a freak. But like, I mean, he just went big on them. Like, if you look at it, like, Milwaukee shot 22% from three. They did not win this game with their jump shots. Like, they just went into the paint. Giannis, Brooke Lopez had like a 2-minute stretch. You know, Bobby Porter shot the ball pretty well yesterday, but like was also going in. Like, Chris Middleton was like mid-range shots, like getting to the basket, like when he did. But like, they just beat them in the paint, which in this day and age is so rare.
Yeah. I hate to give Mark Jackson credit for anything, but I think at one point during the broadcast last night, Mark Jackson was like, it feels like 1990s basketball. And I was like, it kind of does, actually. It kind of does.
It really was. I mean, it was just downhill every single possession from Giannis and the supporting cast.
Yeah. And I say this. I saw this little fact here. Throughout the entire playoffs, Drew Holiday was a +160, the highest plus minus by any player. like we said, wasn't scoring at all times, but defense. I mean, how many big steals did he have against, not only just in this, he had a real nice steal in game six off of Devin Booker, but he did in game five, he did in game four, like wonderful defensive plays on both Chris Paul and Devin Booker. I did see somewhere that he had, I think it was like three or four more assists this in the finals than Chris Paul did. Like, by and large, like, he didn't score, but he helped in the ways that he needed to. And that's what this entire team has kind of felt like. It's a bunch of guys play really good defense while the main star plays his ass off. And every once in a while, the second and third star play their asses off, which is very much 90s basketball.
And they, I mean, he forced Chris Paul into a lot of bad decisions. There were a lot of times where I was like, oh, what are you doing? And like, just dumb turnovers. And I'm like, well, you know, that's not great. And like Chris Paul, a guy who like doesn't very easily get and I'm not saying Chris Paul was rattled, but like there are a lot of times where I was like, he looks like he's out of sorts here. So like, yeah, a lot of credit to them. Honestly, a lot of credit to Chris Middleton, who kept shooting and kept doing things and then like hit that big, like 18 footer over.
That was the dagger. I mean, I texted you guys as soon as he hit it. I was like, that's like biggest shot of the game. Like,
it sucked.
It was like, 190. It was like 100 to 96 or 101 to 96 at that point. It was just like, that like that gave you just enough of a lead with like, I think it was like 54 seconds left. No, not like 54. I think it was like maybe like a minute and a half left.
It was a minute.
That's enough of a distance. Yeah, there's like that's enough of a distance where like this game's over. Like that was absolutely a dagger.
Yeah. I also now you're saying that he tied LeBron James for most clutch shots in the fourth or overtime in a playoff series. They both hit 18 clutch shots. The 07 LeBron. It's the most in playoff history. Pretty much that's the only time Chris Middleton you knew to get him the ball. If there was 5 minutes left in the fourth or the overtime, get the ball to Chris Middleton.
Does every shot he hit in the fourth quarter against the Pistons in that playoffs count? Because he scored like what, like 29 of their last 31 points?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was a wild one. But yeah, like that was Chris Middleton showed up in the fourth quarter, if we're being honest. He did show up in game five for sure, and game four, because those two games he played very, very well. But game six, he had one of those games where he was struggling, which you kind of expect him to. But when they needed him most, he hit his shots. And that was a good thing. Because at the end of the day, this is Giannis' team. I mean, we know that for sure. I'm not saying anything against Drew or Chris. But we saw what Giannis does. And we already said it more than once. Without him, they don't win.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I texted you guys yesterday, too. It's just like, Giannis was not going... Like, if Giannis doesn't... like. This is, and a lot of people have been saying this, so this is not an original thought, but like, since I've been watching NBA basketball, it's the most impressive finals game I've ever seen by a player.
I might say the most impressive finals performance, save maybe LeBron against the Warriors when it was just LeBron.
Like 51, 8, and 8.
Yeah. Like,
but like, I mean, this game specifically, not necessarily like the collection of games outside of game one, like he was incredible the entire series, but like this game in particular. This in my basketball watching history, best performance in a finals by any player I've ever seen ever. Just pure dominance on both sides of the court, like could not be stopped. And in a clinching game, like would not let his team lose in a way that like, and credit to Chris Paul, did not have a bad game. Did not have a bad game. At the end of the day,
scored like 8 points though.
What?
Didn't Chris Paul
score 29 or 26? Yeah,
I'm looking at the game incorrectly.
No, Chris Paul had a great game last night.
I think that's just a fourth quarter stat. He scored 8 points. That's what I'm looking
at. Chris Paul was solid yesterday. I mean, he did everything he could. He was 26-5-2, 11 of 19 shooting. It's just Ayton and Booker hit a wall, man. There's no way to get around it. Booker was 8 for 22. Ayton was 4 for 12. Like, he wasn't doing anything. Like, nothing at all. And just, you know, they just weren't getting anything from anybody else. I mean, Campaign was solid off the bench and, like... You know, Crowder gave them like 15 and 13, but he was also 4 for 11. Like they were ice cold. Yep. And, you know, luckily the Bucks had Giannis on their side because, like I said, if Giannis scores 10 less points, they lose this game. Like we'd be talking about game seven. But
I'm sad we're not, like, just because from strictly from a more basketball standpoint.
Yeah.
But.
I was thinking about that last night. I was just like, am I bummed that this is over, or am I just am I happy for the Bucks? And I think my happiness for Giannis and the Bucks outweighs like me wanting to see one more game.
I have a tendency to agree with you.
Just because of the whole spectacle, right? They're in Milwaukee. They wanted it at home. The fans are there. Like, it's the whole thing. Like, Giannis's family is there. Like, it's just, the whole thing was like very storybook ending. Like,
oh, sure.
It was awesome. Yeah. It was awesome. Yeah. I mean, like, I was texting, like, I almost cried. Like, watching Giannis cry and then like holding his mom and his kid. I'm just like, oh my God, am I going to cry? Holy shit. It was like it was really emotional.
Yeah.
I not to take away from your tears of joy for Giannis, but I did see some people talking some mess on Twitter about like how much the Suns were hurting with Dario Saric going down. And my thought to that is like, if Dario Saric is who you're referring to as like your X factor in this series, like I'm pretty sure you still weren't going to win.
Well, yeah, and like I see your Dario Saric, and I raise you a Dante DiVincenzo. Like, they're equivalent players in terms of impact on their team. So like, we're not really, it's equivalent like across the board.
Because it would not be right to talk about an NBA game and compare a white player to another white player, which must be done at all times. I want to give a shout out to Pat Connaughton who stepped up in this series and like I thought played really, really, really well. He hit shots when he needed to hit shots. He played good defense. He rebounded. He did everything he needed to do. And like, I'm not saying that like he had like some huge bearing on things, but like he did all the right things and he played well. So like, yeah, dude, you can just jettison your other white guy because you got Pat Connaughton.
Yeah, I mean, Connaughton was great, but like we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about my boy BP. Oh, crazy eyes. I mean, dude did not play at all in the Nets series.
Can we definitively say that that's not Plaxico Burress?
Listen, do you know where Plaxico Burress is?
I don't. That's what I'm saying. Never seen him in the same room together at the same time.
That's what I'm saying. I don't remember how tall Plaxico Burress is. I don't remember what his jump shot looks like. So who's to say? All I can say is Bobby Portis is going to get paid because of this series, and he deserves it.
I mean, he also shot like all, like 45% from three this year. Like, he was the second or third highest shooting 3-point percentage. I know not on as many attempts as other people.
Like very, very few attempts.
But he's pretty much
like he definitely.
What I'm saying is, he's pretty much proven like, hey, I can help stretch the floor a little bit. Absolutely. I can bang down low. I'll get you some boards. Shout out to PJ Tucker. He had to play the hardest player every single freaking series. Also, congrats on beating an old teammate every series, an old Houston teammate.
That's crazy.
He beat Chris Paul. He beat James Harden. He beat Clint Capella. And who was the last one that he would have beaten? Who was on the Heat?
Oh, Trevor Ariza.
Trevor Ariza. Yeah. At one point, a starting five together. And then he had to beat all of them in order to win the championship.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, this whole thing was fun as hell. Like, the Giannis, like, the whole Giannis experience, like, I remember, and Tad talked about this before, but, like, oh no, this was in the text thread last night. It was just like, we talked about how boring the games were because it was just like blowouts. And then it just got increasingly better as the series went on. And like,
unbelievable.
Totally satisfied. Like, this was the first time in a long time, too, that I watched a series where I'm like a final series where I'm like, I don't know who I want to win this. I'm not going to be upset either way. I'll be bummed for the other party. Like, there's no getting around it. Like, I would have loved to see Chris Paul get his first championship. That would have been really cool. It would have been really cool because, like, he's got maybe 2 years left. Like, this was arguably his last chance.
Yeah.
And they're going to run it back. They're going to pay him. He's going to come back. Like, he has no better option. This is his best option, is to come back, run it back again with a team that is like, is young, has proven that they can win, and like has their best players for the most part under like good team contracts.
I found myself coming around to the Bucks. You know, like sometimes you're like, oh, like I'm pretty sure I want this team to win. And then you start watching, you're like, actually, yeah. I found myself coming around. I started actively rooting for Milwaukee. So, you know, like shouts to them. But
the honest thing, man, like he has.
You're right. That's exactly what it is.
He has to have the highest approval rating of all the. I don't know a person or a player in the NBA who's like, maybe James Harden, but like who's like
James Harden.
Giannis kind of sucks, but like everybody likes he's just such a likable dude.
And his story, I mean, you see Twitter like, just lighting up with NBA and, you know, like, yeah, people just super happy and excited for him. Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
I mean, his story is incredible. Like his rise from like this, like, who is this kid to just like, and this scrawny teenager to who he's become, the work ethic, like you can't not love this dude. So it's just like watching him in that moment. And like I was saying, like the emotion on his face after it was over, when he just sat down and the cameras were on, which was like, that was real raw. Just like, I've been working so fucking hard for this. Like, even when they were like interviewing him and he looked at Chris Middleton, which is like, Chris, we did it. I was just like, damn. Cause like, you don't see this in the NBA. Like, these dudes have been on the same team for 8 years. Chris Middleton was a part of the Brandon Jennings trade. Like, yeah, these were two dudes where they're like, we're just going to keep running it back with you. Like, most teams don't have this level of patience.
No,
most superstars don't have this level of patience to build a team around two guys for 2 years and keep running it back and keep running it back and keep running it back. And it's very akin to Dirk in Dallas, where they were like, we're going to figure this out. One of these days we're going to figure this shit out. And like, it was just, fucking great finals, man. I loved every minute of it.
It was a great feeling, if I'm being honest, watching those last seconds tick down. Every person who's listened to this podcast knows my thought process on Giannis. So I hate the guy.
Also, credit to you guys. I want to say this because I like to give credit to myself frequently. So I'd like to give credit to both of you who said, if Giannis plays, the Bucks win in six.
Boom. Yep. We did it. Now, Nikki did say six. I said seven. So I'll take that.
Dude, shut up and take the compliment, man.
Right. I appreciate it. I'm giving Nikki the extra compliment.
Congratulations to the Bucks. Congratulations to Booby Portitz, Mike Boden holding the dick. Congrats on keeping your job, Mike. That's wonderful. Fucking Jeff Teague is a champion. Like,
that one made me happy. That
gets his due, man. Jeff Teague.
Finally, I got it, man. Finally.
What's his brother? What's Marcus Teague up to these days? He's still on the Bulls, probably.
I'm sure he's playing in Russia.
Oh, man. Congratulations to Thanasis. Three of the Antetokounmpo brothers are champions now, back to back years.
Unreal.
Wild stuff. It's the dreams that LeVar Ball always had. congratulations to the Antetokounmpos. Now let's talk about the most important thing of the night. We all saw Space Jam 2.
Sure did.
We all seen it. A lot of people literally everyone seeing it. I recently read a thing that Disney's pissed at how much better Space Jam 2 is doing than Black Widow. But, you know, people love Looney Tunes. People love basketball. Before we get too much of a discussion, I'm going to say this caveat. It was a kid's movie, so of course it wasn't like the world's greatest movie. But I'm going to say this. Bob and I were in the perfect mood. We were just chugging beers, watching stupid-ass shit. Eventually, Big Chungus showed up, so that was fun to see a meme in a movie that I was not expecting. I had fun watching this movie. I know it wasn't a good movie, but I do actually want to hear your guys' thoughts on the movie.
Tad, would you like to start?
Yeah, I mean, it was a self-masturbatory look at all our IPs thing from Warner Brothers, and I didn't care for that. And I just think that the first movie had a better story and like was a little more creative and that kind of thing. Like, look, man, I don't need some life lesson about how you should let your kids follow their fucking dreams. I just want to see LeBron James and a team that features Bugs Bunny. In the beginning of the movie, it's like, oh, like the also spoilers, guys, if you haven't seen this, turn it off now, but
you could just stop listening.
You know, he was like, oh, the glitch, like this, I tried to do your move, dad, in the game, but like it's a glitch, and you're like, okay, well, I know how they're gonna win the fucking game.
Yeah,
with this dumbass shot. You know what, Michael Jordan stretched his arm from half court and dropped the ball in the basket. LeBron could never. Now I also, that said, like, I hate it. I watched it and like, I didn't like it at first. And I think I kind of came around on it. Is it the first movie? No, it's the first movie has Bill fucking Murray and fucking Newman from Seinfeld. You know, I mean, like, I don't know how you're going to top that, but I mean, for like what it is, not a bad movie. It was fine. But again, I just didn't need the message. Just give me LeBron, give me Bugs Bunny and give me them up against a, you know, crazy team of well, in this case, like avatars of NBA players. you know, there were some plot flaws in the movie. Certainly, I'm not going to get into all of them. Like, for example, the fact that, like, you know, they didn't really use Damian Lillard's character enough, who could like literally stop time. Yeah. Feel like poor that's coaching. Probably like an easy advantage to just you score a basket, you stop time, steal the ball in the inbounds, lay it in, and just do that until the score is 8,000. And also, let's talk about that. The final score was like 7,000 to like 7,002.
There was a reason behind that, Tad. It was a video game. There was video game rules. That's why LeBron had to learn. It's about fundamentals, not fundamentals. LeBron was a big pop point.
I also have one major issue that I just want to clear up real fast, and I'll kick it over to you guys. You can say whatever you want about the movie, but I got one last thing. The movie really did not do well with me at the beginning when it's like LeBron's mom dropping him off at his game, and then they do some weird secret handshake. I was like, well, this is going to be a goddamn cringe fest. Like, I can't do this.
The big thing for me, one, it was 2 hours long. It did not need to be 2 hours long.
No, the original is an hour and 27 minutes.
Yeah, it's a kid's movie. Hour and a half, and like, we're good to go. Like, what is this? I did, like I said, I had a lot of fun. I did have some genuine laughs at it. The one thing that I was like, oh, well, good for you. LeBron James came in and was like, what if I was a dick? Because he's not a nice guy in the beginning of that movie. He's a kind of a dick to his own son.
So intense.
Yeah, so I was like, that's actually surprising that he was like, I'll play an asshole for the beginning of this, and I'll have like an actual story arc. So I'll give him that. But yeah, I don't think it was, I mean, as I saw on, someone tweeted out, was like, is Space Jam dude trash, or are you 35? Like, I was like, I get it. I'm not a child. Yeah, it's like, I'm only 30, but I get it. Like, I'm not a child. It wasn't meant for me. The only reason I like Space Jam 1 is because I was a child. Because if we would have seen that movie at this age, we'd be like, this was just a commercial. Like, Space Jam 1 is just a commercial for everything that Michael Jordan's ever done. And Space Jam 2 is a commercial for anything that Warner Brothers has ever done. So that was kind of an interesting little point. I also don't know if you guys seen those graphics that have been going around. Michael Jordan was 22 for 22 in Space Jam 1. And LeBron James was 4 of 5.
One assist, though. Selfless player.
One assist. Selfless. I think Michael Jordan has a rebound and assist, too, if I'm not mistaken. He had one rebound and one assist.
Zero and zero.
Some guy wrote, several years ago, wrote a breakdown of like the box score of that game. And the most like realistic aspect of that movie was the fact that the blue Monstar, who is Sean Bradley, records zero stats.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just like is there. The best ones are the ones that are Charles Barkley and I think Sean Kemp, right?
No, Larry Johnson.
Larry Johnson. Yeah, there we go. That's what I meant to say. Yeah, those two are the Monstars that play the best. It's literally like Michael Jordan, those two Monstars, and then like Bugs and Lola contribute a little bit. And both of them contributed very little in Space Jam 2 as well. I don't know how the score ended up being how it was. Was it LeBron James' kid who ended up scoring all the points for them? Because I was very confused. It didn't really show who was scoring all that often.
It was a combination of things. I think LeBron finally figured out like how to get his teammates involved. You know, Lola,
she's always,
you know,
been good at doing.
She had some stuff. You know, they did some stuff with like Wiley, Coyote, Bugs, you know, got Looney. And
Rick and Morty show up just to throw Tasmanian Devil in it. And they're just like, we don't like him. Get him away from us. Goodbye.
It was so interesting. Like I think to Taz's point, like part of me was like nostalgic, like, oh, wow. You know what? Warner Bros. Got a lot of shit. And I'm like, this is worse than product placement almost. Like this is like worse than product placement.
I thought it was very interesting how like behind the Goon Squad's bench was the clown from It that made like 40 appearances in this movie. I'm like, this is a kid's movie. Yeah. Maybe that's not the IP that we want to show there.
Lightning.
Mr. Freeze was
the penguin was fucking hanging out on the sidelines.
I do want to address one other quick thing here. Because you mentioned Lola Bunny a number of times. Give me thick Lola Bunny or give me death. Like, oh, I'm just simply not going to stand for what they've done. Like, you know what? Like, what we have to now even Lola Bunny has to confirm to your stick thin beauty standards. Like, please.
Unbelievable.
I did like that they did during practice. They wore the old uniforms. They wore the old Space Jam uniforms. They do cut to the original aliens a few times.
They did, like, yeah.
And then I legit stood up when the Alan Parsons Project started playing. And they were like, I found Michael. And you're like, what? And then it started playing. And I was just like, oh, my God. And it's Michael B. Jordan, which I assumed the actual Michael Jordan wasn't going to fucking show up.
I thought so, too.
When the music cut on, I was like, holy fuck. Is he actually going to show up in this movie? I laughed hard.
And when he's just like, yeah, I was just in the crowd. This dude just came and grabbed me.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that made me laugh. I was like, all right, that's pretty funny. Lil Rel and Ernie Johnson were fun together. It was, again, it wasn't a good movie, but it was fun to watch.
It was a lighthearted romp that the whole family can enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, in my case, you and your high roommate.
Also fair. I watched it with my friend while we were drinking. So same.
Yeah.
Same boat.
And with that, let's cut over to plugs.
You can follow me on Twitter at @TadHall_, and you can follow me on Instagram at @Tad.Hall. That's TAD.HALL.
And you can follow me at @J_Kilos on Instagram and Twitter.
You can follow me at Nikki Palooza. You can follow the podcast at NBA Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And you can follow at Valley Ghostbusters on TikTok. All right. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. For Jay, for Tad, I've been Nikki. This has been NBA. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Bye.